Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lucas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today, myself, Jim Buster, are delighted to welcome along Ben Banks. Ben, thanks for coming on, pal.
No worries. Happy to be on.
Well, Ben was the BBC school reporter. He was featured recently before the game against Hearts. A bit of a lucky mascot, I suppose, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite glad when it went up on the two. I was a bit, after the game, I was a bit fear when it was getting edited and stuff, if we get put out in the cup on the Sunday, and then it'd be a bit of a whimper when it went out on the Monday. But no, it was really good timing once we won that, and obviously being on the BBC made it a wee bit better.
Yeah, a really good video, and if you can, I think you can still check it out on Twitter and on the BBC website. So if you get a chance, certainly check out Ben in action. Today we're just recording on the back of 3 or 4 hours after full time. A 0-0 draw with Celtic, a fantastic performance, a fantastic team performance, the battling spirit that we've seen many times from this Motherwell team over the course of the season. It certainly wasn't evident in Aki's game last week. We said, Jay, that we really needed to see a response from the team. We certainly got that, and given the circumstances as well, reduced to 10 men with a couple of minutes left in the first half, that was a very welcome point and a very welcome performance more than anything else, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we spoke last week just about, you know, how bad the performance was at Aki's. I don't think anybody associated with the club, fans, management, players, would have been anything other than really, really disappointed with how we played at Aki's. So it was always going to take a massive performance today to get anything out of the game. You know, we know how good Celtic can be, but also to go down to 10 men in that first half. I'm sure we will spend a good bit of the podcast discussing the decision, discussing Craig Thompson in particular. But the team, you know, I don't want that to overshadow the performance of the team. I thought every player in the park was you know, really, really good. Obviously, you know, we're not world class, so there was, you know, some misplaced passes, some poor decisions at times. But I think, you know, by and large, every single player put in the effort, determination, the passion that was needed to get something out of that game. You know, I saw somebody put on Facebook after full time that if that was a Mark McGee side, you know, after that red card, after half time, we would probably have went on and lost, you know, 3-4, 5-0. The way the players just conducted themselves, you know, got tore in. They wasn't feeling sorry. You know, we weren't feeling sorry for ourselves. We weren't, you know, throwing ourselves into tackles, losing the head or anything like that. It was all very much controlled determination or controlled passing, passion, sorry. And it was just really good to watch. I think, you know, very rarely do you get a 0-0 that I think is actually quite entertaining. But I thought it was an entertaining game, particularly in that first half where I thought we were the better team. I think, you know, if that had continued into the second half and we'd been allowed to keep 11 men in the park, then 3 points were certainly there for us, you know, ours for the taking. I thought we were the better team. I thought we'd obviously forced Bain in a couple of saves. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see just what would have happened in that second half if we'd been allowed to, you know, keep 11 men in the pitch. But in saying that, you have to deal with, you know, the decisions that are made. been down to 10, I think a lot of Motherwell fans would have feared the worst at that stage. And instead, we get tore in, possibly could even nicked it. You know, we didn't create any massively clear-cut chances in the second half, but we had corners, we had balls in dangerous areas. And another day, you know, it could have been a famous win.
Buster will obviously go on and talk about Craig Thompson in quite great depth a wee bit later on, but we'll keep on the performance. And I think after the blow of losing at Hamilton and being so poor at Hamilton, followed up by the psychological blow of Hearts winning this weekend, Kilmarnock winning, it looks like the top six is beyond us. We obviously talked last week that we felt that would be the case. To get a response out of the players is a great tribute to Stephen Robinson and also the character of the squad. They've not let their heads drop. They've went toe-to-toe with the champions. And not only that, I think at times we're the better team. We can consider ourselves actually quite unfortunate that we had 10 men in the park. We perhaps were limited in the amount of attacking forays we could have, but when we did, we caused them a lot of bother, and it certainly wasn't a comfortable afternoon for Celtic.
No, as you say, I don't think, you know, as you say, given the scores over the weekend, I don't think MD was really expecting us to go and push for the top six any longer. But, you know, coming up against Celtic, whether it's a Fir Park or Parkhead, you don't really expect anything. But as Jay said, when we were 11 men, we were making our chances. We were certainly going toe to toe with them, if not maybe slightly better than them. That's maybe just a slight exaggeration. But I thought we were absolutely fantastic, especially, you know, certain players. Dunn, Aldred, Tate, absolutely solid. A brick wall today. Carson as well, to be fair, actually, we'll include him with him. They were absolutely solid. Alan Campbell was Alan Campbell. I don't think I've got enough words in my vocabulary to describe Alan Campbell, to be honest with you. Ryan Bowman moved to a sort of right midfield in the second half, and I thought he was absolutely fantastic as well. His tracking back and his tackling at times, I thought, was great as well. When he was there when he needed to be. And obviously, you know, he's a big guy, so anytime the ball gets come across there, he's up challenging for it as well. And Main for me was my man of the match. I think Curtis Main is an absolute machine. You know, when we had the 11 men, it was, you know, the ball was going out the channels and he was the one chasing it. He's the one that was our danger, basically. And then when we went down to 10, he's up there himself, and he'd run himself into the ground today. Absolutely solid. You know, again, it was looking like he was going to be the one that was going to be wanting a fight with Scott Brown. Basically, there was three or four corners we had in the first half, and he's in his face pushing him about. You know, Brown's getting it back as well, but I thought Curtis Main was absolutely fantastic today, and I think it surprised us all when he took that free kick with his left foot. I don't think MD knew he was left footed.
it was a good stop as well. It was hit with a fair bit of pace. Ben, I think the moment that will stand out in terms of just showing the spirit in this team is Richard Tate's tackle towards the end. I thought, after being touted by Stephen Robinson for the Scotland set-up, Tate had one of his most disappointing 90 minutes last week at Accies. So again, another player that responded, and he did in some style. It was a fantastic display.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think could have thought of much worse endings to that game of Scott Sinclair after everything that's happened. He'd went up the other end and scored. But no, Richard Tate, again, bounced back from last week. He was, like most of the Motherwell players last week, was really, really disappointing. So it was good to get back to what we can do, and it does show this week that we can perform to that level. And Richard Tate was one of the standouts in many good individual performances today, and sprinting, it must have been 70 yards or something back into his own box to block. That sort of epitomised what Motherwell were all about today.
Just before that, Jay, I thought we actually had a very decent shout for a penalty. I know that we're recording a wee bit raw here just now because we've not had a good chance to analyse highlights and everything else, but as Ben said, Sinclair bursts up the park, but Main goes down inside the area. I think if it had been at the other end, without conspiracy theories and everything else, there's a very strong possibility with 4,000 or 5,000 people behind it shouting for a penalty, the referee gives that.
It's one of those ones that, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, again, it's difficult because I've not seen it back. You know, I've you know, I don't know if any of us have, because obviously, you know, being at the game up the road and recording this podcast, it was down the other end for us, so didn't get the best view of it. But in saying that, I think you're right. If that happens at the other end of the park, I think Celtic get that all day long.
I never seen much of his, because as Jesse says, it was down the other side. I think I was looking at something else in the park or something, because I never really seen much yet. But what I did see was there's a still, and again we spoke about how we hate stills and stuff, but there's a still going about of whoever the centre half is, with both his arms around Curtis Main's chest, basically around his, you know, basically got him in a full Nelson grip sort of thing. So I'm recording Sports Scene as we speak, so I'll watch it back and make my mind up then, but I never really got a good look at it. But there is that sort of, he's got both his hands on him basically at that point.
Well, I sit in the Davy Cooper stand, so I was right behind the goal to see it, and you could see the contact was coming in, but for the full 90 minutes that had happened two or three times with Celtic players and Motherwell players, and Craig Thompson never gave it once. So when that happened, even though if it's anywhere else in the park it should be a foul, but just from the way the game was going, you just knew that's not getting given.
Well, at least he was consistent.
Consistent but terrible, and it's a nice wee streamlined way into talking about the referee, because I think despite the fact it's a brilliant point, our second draw against Celtic this season, so we have been a bit of a thorn in their side at Fir Park, I suppose, given that they very rarely drop points wherever they go. But the decision to send Kipre off, it could have really actually been a complete game changer. It's a coming together between Brown and Kipre. Brown pushes Kipre in the deck, Kipre kicks him in the arse, and Thompson within milliseconds has got that red card out. He could not wait to produce the red card. Incredibly, that's now what his fifth Motherwell player he's set off this season, albeit three in the one game. It's spilled over into the tunnel at half time as well. There was words between Robinson and Brown. Jade, Craig Thompson never fails to be the centre of attention when he's in charge of our game, whether it be against Celtic, St Johnston, it doesn't matter. Craig Thompson will always put his stamp in the game, and for me it's for all the wrong reasons as well.
Well, that's it. I think the thing about Craig Thompson is that he's obviously, for some reason, he seems to be widely recognised as one of the best referees in Scotland. I can't work out why. At the end of the day, you know, the best referees are the ones that you come away for the game not even knowing who the referee was. You know, a referee is not there to be the centre of attention. The referee is not there to take the limelight. The referee is there to quietly, you know, keep control of the game. So if you come away for a game and you don't actually have a, you know, who was the ref? Oh, I didn't even notice. That means the referees had a good performance. You just don't get that for Craig Thompson. Craig Thompson seems to really revel in the fact that he's on a football park. He seems to really, you know, really enjoy being the centre of attention. He comes across as incredibly arrogant as well. I think back to that St Johnston game, the way he was kind of, you know, interacting with the Motherwell support, the facial expressions and things like that. He seems to get a real kick out of the fact that he's got the power and he's got that control. And you're right. I mean, I wouldn't even describe it as a kick on the arse. I don't think Capri did anything. I mean, listening to the radio on the way back, normally, particularly when a team like Celtic are involved, you know, there'll be one or two pundits who will, you know, try and justify it. But to a man, every single person has said it wasn't a red card. In fact, Brendan Rodgers' post-match interview, as Rob McLean, I think it was, or Richard Gordon, whoever it was, said afterwards, you know, Brendan Rodgers' comments were as close as possible to an opposition manager saying it wasn't a red card. It was that simple. It just wasn't a sending off. And any half-decent referee would have basically just called both Brown and Kipre over and just said, chill out, you know, our judges are both going in the book. And that would have been it. Move on. You know, allow 11 players to play 11 players. It was a good game up to that point. As has already been mentioned, we were competing. We were going toe-to-toe with Celtic. In my opinion, we were slightly the better team. It's on TV. There's folk in the stadium who have paid to see the game. There's folk watching on telly. Give them, you know, a game to watch. I mean, Thompson didn't even see the incident. I mean, for where we were, it's obviously in our line of sight that you can see the incident and Thompson, because we're kind of, you know, looking at it diagonally. And Thompson was watching the ball. Thompson saw Scott Brown out the corner of his eye go down. Now, I don't know if the main stand linesman or the fourth official has perhaps done a Douglas Ross and screamed red card down his wee earpiece at him. That's obviously, very possible. But if Craig Thompson's made that decision on his own, it's purely because he saw Scott Brown hit the deck out the corner of his eye and nothing more. So for him then to gesture that it was a clear stamp is just absolute nonsense. As I said, I think it's really telling that every single pundit has it was almost a joke listening to BBC Scotland. It was almost a joke between them all at just how bad a decision it was. Well, obviously, you don't know what would have happened had we kept 11 players on the park. We might have went on and got the defeat. So we can obviously only deal with what actually happened. But yeah, it just kind of overshadowed the game. It was a stupid red card that didn't need to happen. And it's typical of Craig Thompson, and that's the big problem. He's supposedly our best referee, and yet it's all about him. It always is. He revels in being making a big decision. It's almost as though he thinks he's there to influence the game rather than keeping it in check. And it's pointless, it's unacceptable, and it's an example again of why referees should be expected to come out and explain their decisions. He should be coming out and he should be saying, okay, I've looked at it back, I got it wrong, I thought there was a stamp, there wasn't. It would still be unacceptable, it would still be a terrible decision, but at least then there would be, you could accept that a little bit. Whereas all that will happen is there'll be silence for Craig Thompson until he's refereeing elsewhere for the rest of the season, and will no doubt go on to, add a sixth or a seventh Motherwell red card to his tally before the end of the season.
In regards to the actual, scuffle, because that's what it was. It was a wee handbags thing. So why, in the first instance, my first thought was, why is Scott Brown allowed to, just shove people? Why is that allowed? And then, when I came home, I've had a quick look at certain things, the match thread on Pye and Bovro, for example, and somebody in there has actually put, excessive force or brutality is required for a red card for the rules. Now, I don't see any excessive force or MD being very brutal. Scott Brown's push had a lot more force in it than Kipri's, slight kick to the knee or whatever it was he did. So, again, at the game, when I turned around and I said to you, just exactly what you said there, I said, is there any decent ref worth a salt with a turn around and went, what the fuck is doing, boys? Calm down. Stop being stupid. That would have been at the end of... It's incredible to think that moving your leg towards somebody, because it can't even be described as a kick. It was that feeble, it can't be described as a kick. It's incredible to think that these sort of things would get you sent off. It's utter shite, basically.
Ben, this is a bit of gamesmanship in Scott Brown's part, isn't it? It's kind of almost like the dark arts, where perhaps he's got away with this sort of thing so many times that he uses it to his advantage, and fair play to him, I suppose, because yet again it's worked wonders for him there. He's got in Keeper's head a wee bit with the push, waited for his reaction, and then thrown himself in the deck. And for all that the referee's got it wrong and has been conned, Scott Brown, an experienced player like that, it's quite disappointing to see him being such a pathetic individual in that instance, because he's went out his way to get a man sent off. Celtic winning 6 titles in a row already, well on their way to a 7th. Does a player like Brown really need to do that to give Celtic an advantage to beat Motherwell?
I'd seen, just through scrolling through Twitter and stuff, a couple of pieces online from the 1-1 draw for Park in December, and it was Scott Brown claiming that Louis Moult conned the referee into giving Mull a free kick, which ultimately led to the goal, and how it's a farce and it shouldn't have happened and stuff. And now, today at Firth Park, Scott Brown's done exactly that, conned the referee and given his team the upper hand. But, as you said, he's an experienced individual who knows how he gets into people's heads. He's a bit of a menace in Scottish football to everyone apart from the Celtic fans. And Kipri's only a young boy. I mean, he's 20-odd. So he's got into his head and he's obviously aggravated him, and you could say it was a reaction, but he just sort of goes to lift his leg and Scott Brown obviously starts rolling about like he's been shot, and Craig Thompson's gave five red cards to Mull players this season, and Capri already maybe having a bit of a, he's card marked after recent allegations in the cup final when he allegedly fouled Sinclair. So he goes down rolling about like he's been shot, and then Capri's off again. So it's definitely maybe experience, but at the same time it shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, but that's, I think Cedric Capri first and foremost was having a very good game up until that point.
Yeah.
That being said, it is naive, particularly when you know Ben mentioned his card was marked. That's quite a good way to put it. There was the tackle on Dembele during the cup final. He was then subsequently sent off later on in the game for appearing to touch Scott Sinclair, and then Sinclair throwing himself in the box. But the issue there is, we know that Craig Thompson's a card-happy referee. We know that Craig Thompson likes to be the centre of attention. What Capri did there is he gave a card-happy, egocentric referee a decision to make. And 9 times out of 10, when that happens, and given the circumstances of the personality of the referee, it's going to be a red card.
Yeah, you know, don't get me wrong, I think we're all trying to defend Cedric Capri, and quite rightly so. However, it should have been drilled into these players' heads. Don't give this guy a sniff of an opportunity, because you know what he's like. Again, you know, when it was announced on Tuesday, whatever day it was, Craig Thompson's a ref. You can go back through Twitter and see all the Motherwell fans, see their reaction. You know, that they knew that this was coming, basically. But again, it was, as you have said, maybe a bit naive, certainly stupid. You know, in that instance there, he should be getting up and, you know, even maybe even saying to the ref, what are you letting him push me for? You know, maybe just stupid, wee daft things like that. Instead, he's been stupid and he's lifted his leg. And again, I can't even call it a kick. He's lifted his leg towards him, and it's, you know, it's looked bad, and he's got his card. So, as we said, he's a young boy, 21 year old. He's, you know, he's learning, and you know, it's just a wee mistake they'll have to learn from. But it should and probably was drilled into every one of your players. Don't give this guy a sniff because he's an arsehole.
We'll move it on, and for me, I certainly don't want to talk about major negatives, but I think it is worth discussing. You maybe lack a leader on the park just now. Callum McHugh for me hasn't bedded into his role as captain. He's maybe struggling for a wee bit for confidence despite his goal against Hearts. He made an error leading to Aki's second goal last week. He gave the ball away quite cheaply on a number of occasions today. So I think he's maybe went into his shell a wee bit. There's quite a lot of instances where you don't see him kind of gene up the players the way you would expect a captain to. Is that maybe an element of it as well, Jay, that there's that wee bit of lack of guidance on the park at times? I suppose as coaches, you can only drill in so much, but when they cross that white line, then it's down to the players, and maybe having someone a wee bit more mature and a wee bit more vocal in the park would eradicate some of these instances like the one we saw today with Capri.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, I think it's quite an easy, it's easy to make assumptions about a captain in terms of, you know, how vocal they are. I mean, Carroll McHugh could be talking folk through the game. He doesn't have to be, you know, screaming and shouting at folk. I do think Carroll McHugh is a confidence player. I do think when his head's down, which I think it has been recently, you see some of the mistakes he makes. It's almost as though he tries to be too sure. You know, there was a couple of loose passes straight out the park today, and then next time he gets the ball, he's needing far too much time on it because he's almost trying to make sure, you know, take as much time as possible to make sure this next pass makes it, and then he gets caught in possession. So I do think there's an element of confidence there, because we know that Carroll McHugh could be a good passer of the ball. Whether you need someone who isn't a confidence play as captain, I suppose, is debatable. I wouldn't say that we don't have leaders as such. I don't think you need to have an armband around your arm to be a leader on the park. You know, I think guys like Aldred, I think even Alan Campbell, you know, I think it was Joe or Buster at the game, you know, mentioned at one point after McHugh gave the ball away and Tate made that fantastic challenge, Alan Campbell gave McHugh absolute dog's abuse for it. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that the role of a captain is to berate players, but we do have vocal guys on the park. I'm not sure whether, you know, the captain choice has any influence on Kipre. Again, you know, if we were talking about an actual stamp, then maybe you could say, right, there needs to be a bit more discipline and things, but we've already accepted that Kipre shouldn't have been sent off. So I don't think that's got an impact on it. I mean, personally, I think that you've got someone like Alan Campbell there who, if he goes on to stay at Motherwell for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years as a future captain, absolutely. But I don't think there's anything in it. I think I'm quite content with Carol McHugh as captain. It's not my kind of job to make assumptions over how vocal he is or how much of a leader he is. You know, being a captain isn't just about shouting at, you know, the players around you for 90 minutes on a Saturday. It's everything in terms of, you know, the training, in terms of you know, passing on the thoughts of players to the manager and things like that. So it's you know, I think it's too easy to kind of pinpoint the fact that because Carol McHugh doesn't seem like a shouter, that he's not a great captain. You know, he's obviously been given the role because he's got something about him. And that's fine by me.
Just to, I mean, Carol McHugh then, he gets a lot of stick for his distribution. Now, Carol McHugh came to Motherwell as a guy who played one season in midfield for Plymouth Argyle. He then, when he came to us, after he came back for his horrendous head knock, played centre-half where he was lauded, and greatly so. He was fantastic for us. Now, just, you know, playing a wee bit of devil's advocate here, I suppose. If we moved Charles Dunn to centre mid, how do you think he would cope? You know, I'm not suggesting that's what's happened or anything, but I'm just thinking, is Carol McHugh, because I think Carol McHugh does things really well. He breaks up about a lot of the play sometimes. He wins a lot of headers in between the midfield and the defence. You know, he's a bit wild in his tackling at times, but you know, he wins a good few tackles as well. So Is there a possibility that he's maybe a no-nonsense centre-half who's somehow found himself playing, you know, centre-mid because he had a good run there at one point?
I don't think it's ridiculous to suggest that. And I think that it was maybe a wee bit of a careless link-up there, but there was a few instances today for me.
No, there was at least three where he made an arse of it, basically, and he made an arse of it last week against Hamilton. His passing, in general, this season has been basically atrocious. But I'm still quite a big fan of him, as I say. Especially, you know, the balls that come over the top of the midfield, but are maybe going to fall short of the defenders. If they're in his area, he's the one that's, you know, he's a big tall player. He's in there winning the headers, putting in the tackles, and I see a bit of that in there. But as you say, is you know, his actual, when he's in possession of the ball, he doesn't look the most assured. And I think that's why everybody was, even, you know, you've seen Ryan Bowman's reaction when he chested that didn't void it. And Ryan Bowman stood with his hands in his head for about 30 seconds. So I think that's maybe, as you say, something. I know it's not a well suggestion to think that he maybe was a no-nonsense centre-half, or, you know, a centre-half at least, who somehow found himself in midfield. And, you know, he's maybe not as much a midfielder as we thought he was.
Ben, it's quite a strange one, isn't it? Because the appointment was made of McHugh as the captain during the post-season, and I think to a man, everybody really went for the decision. They really believed that it was the right decision. There was kind of, across the support, there was a claim that Carol McHugh was exactly the right man to replace Keith Lasley as captain. It's not quite panned out the way we expected this season, but that being said, he's still a very, very big player in our squad.
No, definitely. I mean, when I heard he was appointed captain, a lot of people, certainly in my circle, were calling for Stevie Hamill to eventually get it. But I thought at the time it was a really forward-thinking move by Mullo, appoint somebody young into the role, because he's still only 24, 25. So he is quite young to be a Mullo captain. I think where a lot of the problem stems from is the standard of how to be a Millwall captain was set so high by Keith Lasley. I think he really set the bar for what they should be decent on a pass and could put in a tackle, and he's just not delivered it on that level this season. And I think that's where a lot of the sticks came from. I personally do think he's played some of his better games in centre-back, and when he was into a more defensive position than he usually finds himself in the second half, when we were sat on our own box, he played much better than he did in the first half, because again, he was sitting spraying passes into the east stand and the main stand and out into Fir Park Street, and people were just, Rogic were just running rings around him. So I believe he's still got the potential. I don't think you just lose it. He has had a disappointing season, in my opinion. So I believe he should probably go back one into centre-back, and I think we'd start to see the Callum McHugh that we'd seen last season, and he'd fulfil his potential as captain.
Just a kind of final one in today. We talk about the possibility of moving McHugh back, but I think defensively, the guys at the back, Tay, Aldred, Keith Riley was on, Charles Dunn, were absolutely immense today. Really, really good defensive performance. And as I said earlier, Buster, the spirit of this team was epitomised by the tracking back of Dunn and Tate for the tackle on Sinclair. They absolutely bust their arses to get back there, and really it was celebrated almost like a goal.
I've had goals at I've had a go at Richard Tate for his you know, what I would say was defensive frailties in the past. But again, when I think it, I can't remember who, Sinclair or whatever it was, hit the ball, and he actually ran past Charles Dunn, which I was really surprised at, because, you know, Dunn's nae slouch, but he ran with the ball past Charles Dunn. And maybe, you know, the fact that Dunn was pushing him a wee bit wider has allowed Tate to come across and make that challenge. But Dunn, Tate, Aldred, and again, as I mentioned at the start, Carlson, were all fantastic. Charles Dunn is... The transformation in Charles Dunn is unreal as well. Again, like McHugh, was getting a bit of stick for his distribution. I can't mind who it was that said it, but I read somewhere on Steelman or on Iron Bovril, you know, you can coach somebody to be a wee bit a better passer. You can't coach fast and strong, and that's exactly what Charles is, fast and strong. Him and Aldred today were absolutely fantastic, I thought, and obviously Carlson had a few saves to make as well. So that sort of spirit is what was missing last week at Hamilton, and it's unfortunate, you know, it didn't come about then. But for the team, 10 men, they have to sit in as well, sit in and play in the break there and come away with a point, and that was fantastic. And you see, it goes to show you at times what they're capable of.
Yeah, just the one change for us today, Stephen Hendry came on for Elliot Freer. George Newell, I think, was stripped and ready to go in for the last 30 seconds, but didn't actually get the ball to go out in time to bring him on. I think it was just a aim to run down the clock. It was quite a young bench as well today, with Newell, Petrovictus, Turnbull, Maguire, the big Romana, and Russell Griffiths, obviously, as well, as the sub-goalkeeper. We've not got a game next week due to the international break. What we can do now, though, is confirm that Aberdeen will be our opponents in the Scottish Cup semi-final after a penalty shootout victory over Kilmarnock on Tuesday. Ben, it wasn't really one. You look at Kilmarnock, you look at Aberdeen, both of them very difficult propositions in their own right. Kilmarnock have had an absolute fantastic run under Stevie Clark. Aberdeen always up there at the right end of the league battling, or certainly in the last three or four seasons. Neither tie was going to be easier. I suppose we will be boosted by the fact that Aberdeen will be without the likes of Kenny McLean, Shea Logan. I'm trying to remember the other player that's suspended. If someone can bail me out here, that would be much appreciated.
It was Kenny McLean.
Oh, that's the first one I mentioned. McLean.
Oh, Shinny. Sorry, never heard you.
Shinny, Hogan, McLean.
Yeah, that's the three. So definitely a tough tie, Ben. But again, one we can look forward to. And we can take some confidence from the fact we've beaten Aberdeen so convincingly in the quarterfinal of the Betfred League Cup, and also beating them at Pittodrie a couple of months after that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I personally, I'm just with the suspension stuff, out of the two ties, none of them were really going to be easy, but I just think the way Kilmarnock have been playing now, I mean, they're basically winning every single game 1-0. They've forgot how to get beat, obviously, apart from Tuesday night when Aberdeen put them out. But, no, I think it'll still be a really difficult game. Aberdeen have good quality in players like Gary Mackay, Stephen, Adam Rooney. If he can turn up and he's a clinical finisher. I still think it'll be a really, really tough game. But we have got a good record over Aberdeen this season. Obviously, the 3-0 win in the Betfred Cup quarter-final. And we also won 2-0 at Pittodrie this season, which is something not many teams have been able to do. Obviously, the two goals came from the now-departed Louis Moult. But I think it'll still be really difficult. But if we can play like we did today, then I don't see why we can't go on and try and beat them.
Yeah, it's no doubt a tough tie. I suppose injury news for ourselves made things that little bit more difficult as well, with Craig Tanner ruled out for between 4 and 6 months with a knee injury. A huge loss, considering particularly in the last 2 or 3 months, I think Tanner has become an integral part of our squad. So, for all I'm saying, Aberdeen will be without three key players, maybe without Carol McHugh due to suspension, and now also big boots to fill in the form of Craig Tanner, given his injury. Guys like Elliot Freer now will be really asked to step up. And Freer, for me, despite his very early season promise, hasn't quite reached the heights we know he can. He's been very unfortunate with injuries too. Big opportunity there for Elliot Freer, and a massive loss obviously for the whole squad, losing Tanner for that length of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Elliot Freer in particular, I think it's important to remember that he's not a wing back. First and foremost, you know, folk are often quite quick to jump to Chris Cadden's defence by suggesting that he's kind of wasted at right wing back, and yet, you know, don't seem to be as forthcoming with that defence when it comes to Elliot Freer. Elliot Freer is as out and out a winger as you get, and I think he is often wasted by getting played at left wing back. That said, I thought like today, I thought he was really integral to everything we did in that first half. You know, obviously everybody's perspective is different depending on where you are. Obviously, where we stand up the back at the very end boys section in the east stand, you're obviously seeing the likes of Freer right in front of you. So maybe it just appears that way. But I thought practically everything that we tended to do in that first half, or a great deal of what we were doing in that first half, was down that left hand side. He was always given an option. He was getting in behind Forrest. I think James Forrest would have been really, really happy to see the back of him when Freer went off, because I think he was giving Forrest a really, really tough gig on the left there. So I like Freer. I think, you know, again, he's one of those players. We're not going to have wingers that are going to, you know, beat every man and then put a fantastic ball into the box, because they wouldn't be at Motherwell if that was the case. But what we do have is a quick winger who can deliver, you know, can create chances. And I'm more than comfortable with Freer, you know, being in and around the team if Tanner is out. Obviously, Tanner is a big miss. He's one of those players who I think, you know, obviously was struggling for game time for a large chunk of the season, but you know, had really started to make himself integral to what we were doing. He was becoming, you know, practically our creative outlet, because we don't have, you know, we have passion, we have heart, we don't have, you know, fantastic players, we don't have creative individuals, whereas Tanner, I think, does have that wee spark. So he will be a big loss, but, you know, you need to remember that we played today without Craig Tanner in that first half, and, you know, really, for me, bested Celtic. So we can do it. And as Ben says, you know, I think we can certainly go into the semi-final full of confidence. I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of those things where if we turn up, if it's it's a team that played, if it's a performance that we saw at Aki's last week, then Aberdeen will horses in the semi-final. If we put in the kind of performance that we did in the first half and the kind of desire and passion and heart that we showed in the second half today, then I think we'll make our second final of the season.
Bust, is it a wee bit of kind of role reversal here? Tanner didn't get very much game time at the start of the season because Freer was in the team and keeping him out, basically. Now you've got a situation where Freer's been kind of limited to sub appearances, obviously started today, but he's got the chance now to prove his point and show what he's capable of, because the early signs were very, very positive when it came to Elliot Freer.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Elliot Freer, to be honest with you. And everything Jay said about him, as far as I'm concerned, is bang on the money there. I think that Stevie Robinson's quite a big fan of him as well, because I remember the beginning of the season, even recently, you know, I've heard them batter on about how many crosses we're putting in the box. And Elliot Freer's obviously a big part of that, being the wing back, I suppose. I was going to say the winger there, but as Jay says, he's the wing back. So I think, you know, like today, for example, all the pre-match talk amongst ourselves and, you know, on the forums and things was the midfield is going to be Rose, McHugh and Campbell. You know, it's going to be a bit of a shit fest. There's not going to be much creativity in there. But I think what we didn't really consider is we might actually see, like we did today, Chris Cadden go back into that sort of central midfield role that he sort of started the season in. And again, I've been pretty critical of Chris Cadden recently as well and his technical ability, I suppose. But, you know, I'd love to see him prove me wrong if he's going to play in that sort of central attacking midfield role. You know, maybe with Freer and Tate on either side, I'd love to see him prove me wrong, because, you know, everybody's got high hopes for Chris Cadden, and I was maybe starting to question, you know, the hopes I had for him. So it'll be good to see how we go about it. And, you know, again, come the semi-finals, as Jay says, if we go and we play our own game and you know, in the style and manner which we played today, I think we'll go in there pretty confident, to be fair.
A forgotten man, Ben, is Ross McLean, who came on against Ross County and scored the winner in extra time back in August and has barely got a sniff since then. Look back to last season as well. Was it 4-3 defeat to Celtic at Fir Park, where he put in the brilliant cross for the second goal. He was instrumental in that game. It looked to have a lot of promise, but hasn't really been afforded the opportunities that quite a lot of other players have. He'll be now thinking, this is a real chance to knock on the door and get my opportunity to show what I'm worth. But again, I look at it and I look at the team line today, and Ross McLean's not in the 18.
Yeah, I think what Ross McLean needs pretty much more, because he has got a lot of promise. We've seen in flashes he can, and he reminds me a bit of Dom Thomas, who also showed that. I think what he needs is a spell out on loan in the Championship or League One, wherever it may be, just to play 90 minutes every week and show that he can play, because he seems to me like a bit of a confidence player who needs to be playing every week. And at this moment in time and at the age he's at, he's probably not going to get that mull. So I think he'd really, at the start of next season, benefit from going to somewhere like Airdrie. Seems to be a popular destination for Mull youngsters these days.
For tourists.
To go out and loan. Tourists. But, no, because as you've seen today, I mean, there's a lot of unfamiliar faces. Like, I used to play down the back, the football park down my way with Barry Maguire, and he was on the bench today. So there's a lot of youth on the bench, and he's still not getting in. And Petr Vickius is also on the bench, and he's pretty useless. So, I think he'd really benefit from a spell out and loan.
I have to agree with that, Jay. McLean has been on the periphery for quite some time now, and you look at the benefits to the likes of Chris Cadden, who went out and loaned to Albion Rovers and came back much stronger, much more confident and ready to, with the belief that he could actually play a part. I think a sustained run of first team football is exactly what players need to kind of ignite their spark, because we've seen so many, and Dom Thomas was mentioned there, that they don't get the chances or don't take the chances when they're given to them. And they can fall right off the radar. And by that point, your career's almost... Well, your career as a Premiership footballer with Motherwell is done. Jack McMillan's went out on loan. Who else went out on loan? The left back went out on loan as well. Was there, I'm pretty sure there's someone. Livingston.
Jake Watt. Luke Watt, maybe?
Yeah, and Livingston also went out on loan, didn't he? But, so we've got players out there with the hope that they'll come back ready to play a part. I think if Ross McLean's continuing just to play under-20s football and sometimes fill a space in the bench, he's not really going to develop to the level we want him to.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one criticism that I have of Stephen Robinson, who I love Stephen Robinson, I think he is fantastic in terms of the way he conducts himself in the press. I think he's done a fantastic job in the year he's been here. The one criticism I maybe have of him is that I don't think we're quite given the chances to the youth that we really should. A lot is made about, you know, the fact that we're a community club and it's all about the youth and we want to be producing our own players. But, you know, does that pathway from the under-20s into the first team really exist? We've of course seen it with Cadden. We've certainly seen it with Campbell, who, you know, I would happily, you know, pay just to go and see Alan Campbell every week. I think he epitomises everything that is good about being a Motherwell fan. You know, that he's a good football player, but it's also that passion, that desire, just would run himself into the ground. So, you know, we do have young players who have established themselves, but, you know, the list, there is a list of really good young players who you wonder what they need to do. Now, of course, there's a balance. You can't go just throwing in young players into your team because you're supposed to give them a chance. You need to be picking the best team possible. You need to be, you know, picking a team that's going to go out and win. But, you know, even... It's a difficult one because there is a balance there. But I would like to see young players being given more of a chance. We've got some good young players there who just don't get their chance. Particularly, you know, you talk about wingers being inconsistent by nature. You know, it's almost a position where it's kind of accepted that wingers are going to be inconsistent. So to just chuck like somebody like Ross McLean on here or there and expect them to take their chance, I think is especially difficult for a young winger. I think you really need to just have faith in somebody like that they can go and get a good run. So I know that one that's been mentioned on social media and things like that, the one bonus, if you like, of being bottom six will be, perhaps be that once we're safe, we can use those last five games to maybe really give these young players a chance. Because we need to, because we do have a kind of a list of players who have had potential and who have kind of just, it's appeared as though we've mismanaged them a little bit. And then by the time we've kind of realised that they're not up, it's partly because we've not actually developed them the way we really should have. So I would like to see more young players getting their chance, because there's no point in having your under-20s and encouraging them to, you know, impress if you're then not going to give them the chance. Ross McLean's a really good example, but, you know, I know obviously today it worked. We didn't make very many changes, as you said, Spara. One change the whole game. That worked for us. However, when I saw that bench, I didn't really expect to see anybody off it anyway. I don't think we've got a management that would throw on, you know, Barry Maguire, for example, even if we were, you know, trailing in the game today or losing. I just, you know, as I said, there's a balance, but I would like to see more of the young players, because I genuinely think that's the one maybe negative or one criticism I think I've got of Robinson. I don't think there's enough trust in some of our other younger players out with Cadden and Campbell.
I think before the podcast, before the Rangers game, we'll need to do a wee bit of a refresher, because I'm just actually on the club website just now and I'm looking at the midfield options in particular and thinking, I assume that Rose had a knock or Rose was suspended today?
He certainly wasn't in the 16, 17, 18, whatever it was, but I don't know if it was why it was.
We've also not got Liam Grimshaw in the 18 as well, someone that was brought in, you'd expected, and then obviously another space is created with Chiefji having to drop out because Celtic are his parent club. So it's a... I don't think we're too badly stocked in terms of players, but it's just obviously a... You've got to, as Jay says, get a level where you trust if you're going to drop these guys in, they're going to do a job for you. And maybe there is a wee bit of doubt. The 20s were sitting quite nicely in the league. I saw they beat Kilmarnock at the start of the week, but then followed it up with a a defeat to Dundee United. So it's obviously a case that while we're performing reasonably well at that level as well, Stephen Craigan can't be positively promoting that certain guys are quite there, and I suppose it's his job and he's done a very good job to get guys to the level. It's maybe going to take a wee bit more time. He also did say as well, Robinson last season, that while it's the aim to bring guys in from the academy, he believes that if he's doing one a season, and I guess that's what he has done this season, then it's a success story. So we'll wait and see, but there's obviously guys on the periphery, but it goes back to the Project Brave type stuff that we talked about the other week. We need to get these guys to the level, and to get to the level, you need to be playing more competitive football. So it's a very tricky one. And also, while we're talking about this, where has Ellis Plummer went?
I think he's went away to do plumbing.
Got himself a trade.
Should we start? Trade, eh? We're just talking about them. Again, Ellis Plummer, I don't know. I don't know where Ellis Plummer was brought in, where it was for the, you know, the 20s, or where it was to be on the outskirts of the first team. But, you know, some of the guys that have been mentioned, you know, Ross McLean, for example, I don't know what his best position is, because something I read suggested that he was played out of position when he played against Celtic. When he sort of played left wing that day, I think, you know, but he sort of played out of position that day, and apparently he's more of an attacking midfielder, as in like a central midfielder, which again, if he came in today, for example, with Tanner gone, or even with, you know, the rest of the season with Tanner gone, you know, that could work. That could suit him as well, if that's his position. But I don't know. Even, you know, some of the guys in the 20s that we bring in, like Petra Competition, one of them, I don't know what's. I don't know what he's doing, to be honest with you. Yeah, I don't know what his position is. Is he a winger? Is he a striker? Can he kick the ball? I've never seen him kick the ball, I don't think, to be honest with you. I think that one of the things you said there, Sparrow, was one a season is a success, and I completely agree with that, to be honest with you. I don't think there's any need or point in us flooding the first teams just for the sake of it. Granted, there's maybe going to be guys like maybe Barry Maguire, as was mentioned earlier, on the bench when needed. But if we've got maybe 15 first team players, then the 20s pushing them, fair enough. But, you know, even from things that maybe Craig said at the beginning of the year, I think he said, you know, like David Turnbull's maybe the most technically gifted player in the team, in the whole team, but he's maybe not ready for the, you know, the first team setup. And I believe he got his debut the other week. He was at Dundee in the cup, or was it the league? It was one of those games, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the cup.
Yeah. So, you know, again, there's a wee guy being introduced. Maybe a bit slowly, fair dues, but, you know, he's come off the bench. We might start to see more of him as the season goes on, but, you know, I don't think it's something that we're in dire need to push for the sake of pushing.
Yeah.
Unless it's Alfredo Aguiman, because I'm in love with that guy for some reason.
Yeah.
Busted the closet's love for a 17-year-old boy.
I suppose that you would, in talking about the one player a season, this season's would be Campbell, wouldn't it? Because Cadden established himself last season after a half season, and then Campbell, this is his first full campaign at it. And if we get guys to the level performance that we got from Cadden last season and Campbell this season, then we're not doing too badly in that score. I think that's pretty much all we've got for this week. Ben, thank you very much for coming on. We really appreciate it, mate.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Jay Buster, thanks as always, guys.
Cheers. Thank you, guys.
Also, just a final one. We'd really need to update the under 20 section of the website, because I've been looking through it and we've still got Dylan Mackin and Tom Fry and things like that, and I'm pretty sure all of them have long gone. But apart from that, right, you've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next week. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
face like an unholy.